Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Mary Eileen Collingwood. She is an ordained Roman Catholic priest. And if you didn't hear last week's episode, we'll tell you a little bit just about how exactly she happened to become a Roman Catholic priest. She, Catholic priest, words that you don't normally hear together. Let me tell you a little bit about Mary Eileen Collingwood. She is a wife, mother, grandmother, and educator who earned her M.A. in theology from St. Mary Seminary and Graduate School of Theology in Ohio. She's taught theology on the secondary and college levels, served as a pastoral minister in parishes, and as director of a diocesan office. She currently is a faculty member for Global Ministries University and the People's Catholic Seminary. Mary Eileen was ordained a priest in 2014 and ordained a bishop in apostolic succession in 2015. She serves as bishop for the Association of Roman Catholic Women Priests and is a member of the presiding team at the Community of St. Bridget, an inclusive Catholic community in Brecksville, Ohio. Please welcome once again Mary Eileen Collingwood. Hello, Mary Eileen.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
Yes, nice to have you back. For anyone who may have missed last week, I think it's important. All we have to do is have you mention once again just exactly how you became a Roman Catholic priest, because I'm sure that's a question on everyone's mind who didn't hear last week. So if you would, tell us about the original priests who were ordained in Germany.
Okay, there were seven women in Germany ordained in 2002 on the Danube River in international waters so that no jurisdiction could stop the ordination. There were a couple of bishops that agreed to ordain them as long as it was secretly done because they did not want to be disciplined by the Vatican. So they ordained the women, and a year later, one of those bishops contacted two of the women and invited them to be ordained bishops so that no other male bishop would be put in a situation where their identity or their good standing with Rome would be jeopardized. So two women were ordained in 2003 as bishops, and from then on, the women's priest movement went from seven to today, 270 worldwide at this point.
That is amazing. That's a number I don't think you mentioned last week. So that's some growth. In your bio, there are several organizations that you are connected with, and we didn't talk about that last week. So first of all, Global Ministries University, what is that?
Global Ministries University is an online university accredited through California for online universities, and they open up programs of study for many, many different Christian denominations, and I was asked to teach on the master's level in homiletics. So I put together a program, and together with the People's Catholic Seminary, it goes hand in hand here. The People's Catholic Seminary is a school of study that is open for certification status. It is not an accredited university. So, for example, if women would like to go for continuing education in certain fields, especially in women's studies, then they would take these courses for their continuing education. Many of the women priests who believe that they need to have some of these courses that are offered through People's Catholic Seminary be part of their preparation for priesthood will also engage in some of these courses, and when they're finished, they get a certification of completion. So together with my teaching with the People's Catholic Seminary, Eucharist course or homiletics course, global ministries say to us, if those students take this course and then add on this project, we can put them into a master's course. And indeed, we, through People's Catholic Seminary and people engaging in that study, they can receive a master's in pastoral ministry through global ministry. So what we're saying is the People's Catholic Seminary and global ministries work hand in hand with each other to provide that master's degree in pastoral ministry. Global ministries actually issues the degree, grants the degree, but the study happens within People's Catholic Seminary.
Now, you mentioned your academic training last week, and I don't think anyone could call it anything but rigorous. You have impressive academic credentials. Would you say that the rule of thumb is that becoming ordained in your association, in your community, follows as rigorous a training as, say, any man who went through seminary training?
I think that has to be explained. There are many women that come to this movement in seeking ordination that do have master's degrees or above in theology, in religious studies, in biblical scholarship, all kinds of things. And then there are women that never got the degree, but that can prove that they've had the coursework. And we believe in equivalencies, okay? And that means that when a woman comes to us with the desire to be ordained, we have to check out all her credentials and all her experiences and her ministerial work, and the fact that everyone, especially women, and I'm gonna make this a big thing about especially women, because women have been subjugated in so many different areas for so many centuries that they have to have developed a certain theology they live by and what works for them, okay? And everyone has it coming in. They have a personal theology. We like to get to know what that theology is. We like to know what track they're on, what they're thinking, why they're thinking it, how it came to be. And with all of that information then, we develop a program for them to complete their education or their preparation of studies. So a lot of times it is individually designed for each applicant. So yes, if they want to go on and get a master's degree, they can. We believe in lifelong education. Nobody is totally prepared at any one point to embark on ministry. There are certain levels of understanding that, you know, you need to at least this or whatever, but we know that to be constantly on the projectile of continuing to engage in studies is a good thing. And especially in this last century, we have so many new things coming out in women theologians and women's thought globally. Feminist theology, liberation theology, majoristic theology, all kinds of mystical theology, all these things that we really want these women to study the current contemporary theology so that they gather the skills and the knowledge needed to minister in the 21st century.
And also, you are bishop for the Association of Roman Catholic Women Priests. And I think a lot of people, when they think of a bishop and a bishop's responsibility, they think of a geographical location, right? The bishop of the Detroit, Michigan area, the bishop of the Grand Rapids area, the bishop of Cleveland, Ohio. Your bishopric, if I can call it that, is not geographical. Am I correct?
You are correct. It's international. Our association is international. The Women Priests Movement overall is an international movement. Within the association, it's a branch of the movement. We do not engage in hierarchical leadership. We engage in circular leadership. We do not engage in regional territories. We can be called as quickly to California, and I'm in Ohio, as I could be called to Europe. It doesn't happen often, but I'm just saying it can happen that way. If we set up regions or dioceses, that means, you know, your bishop is the top person in power. We don't operate that way, okay? It's equal. We are equal with the people that come to us. We are equal with our local communities. We don't act like we have power. In fact, the local communities that women priests engage with are member-led. We are there to serve them. We are not there to direct them. We are there to serve them. And so where their needs are, if we can satisfy that and grow with them, then we'll do that. So I am not the bishop over an area. I am the bishop serving my association to ordain women and men and to be spiritual mentors to those who are ordained. That's my role and purpose of being a bishop. It's not to have the last word on anything. It's to perform those particular roles.
So if you were to look at the paradigm for the bishop in the Bible and compare it to what is going on today, both in the Vatican-controlled Catholic Church and your community, would you say that your model more represents the biblical view of the bishop, or would you say that the idea of bishop of St. Paul and St. Peter, would you say that they really set the ground for what is going on today in the Vatican? But you might actually say, no, ours is a little bit more enlightened. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you follow what you believe is in the New Testament, or do you think what you're doing is an improvement over what's going on in the New Testament?
Well, there's a couple of nuances here that probably have to be clarified. We don't believe in hierarchical structures. Okay, so you have the bishop, you have the archbishop, you have the monsignor, you have the priest, you have the deacon. You know, we ordain in that model because it's a necessity. It's a necessity to be ordained in that model right now, where the Roman Catholic Church stands today, because that is the model they operate from. So if we want to get into that model as far as apostolic succession and ordinations, that's a necessity that we have bishops to do that, okay? That's a necessity that you become a deacon before you're ordained a priest. The role of Monsignor was just an accoutrement in the lineup of hierarchical anything. So we just don't even think about that, and then.
Do you know why God created Monsignors?
Why is that?
So to prove that He could still create ex nihilo.
Okay.
So, but anyway, go on, please.
Yeah. Um, So that's that. So how do we compare to that? Like I said, I keep underscoring the word necessity. It's a necessity that we are a bishop now. I am a bishop now. It's a necessity that we use that role for that purpose of ordaining, so that we can continue to get women and men out there and ministering in inclusive Catholic communities where all are equal and welcome to the table. Our table is open, all are welcome. And that is where we stand with the early Christian communities, okay? And we believe in that. We believe in inclusive love, inclusive prayer gatherings, liturgical gatherings. It is extremely important that we get back to the root of Christianity that way. And so that's where our energy is.
So you are saying that you believe that your model is closer to that which was observed in the New Testament?
Yes.
By the way, let me just break in very briefly to mention that you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. Mary Eileen Collingwood is my guest. She is a part of the Community of St. Bridget and Inclusive Catholic Community in Brecksville, Ohio. So tell us now about St. Bridget's. What is it, and how does it function?
Well, the Community of St. Bridget, it's an inclusive Catholic community where all are welcome. We support Catholic women who have been called to the priesthood by God and their communities. We believe and support that the Spirit is leading women to claim their rightful place in the Catholic Church through ordination and equal access to decision-making roles in the Roman Catholic Church. We embrace a renewed priestly ministry within an inclusive community. All are welcome to worship in a spirit of justice and equality at our open table. We welcome all people, no matter their social, their educational, political, or economic status, whether they're single, married, or widowed, no matter their gender, sexual orientation, age, race, national origin, or religion, they are invited to join us. We offer the Liturgy of the Eucharist every Saturday at 5. We also offer liturgies for major feast days such as Christmas, Easter, etc., and they are celebrated as a community. We encourage home liturgies and make them available for those who request them. We provide all sacramental celebrations, including weddings and funerals. And we belong to several community outreach, social action endeavors within the Cleveland area here. And we're growing. We started off in 2013 with a gathering once a month. And then after I was ordained a priest in 2014, we provided those liturgical gatherings weekly. And it's been weekly ever since. And we started out with, you know, a handful of people that come. And we have been gaining members, but you have to understand here that we're not a bricks and mortar church. We will rent space from another church. We are located in the Brecksville United Church of Christ, who rents space to us. We're very grateful for that. And that's where we share their sanctuary and their meeting rooms, etc. And they've been made a pretty much a home for us there with them. And that is true with the United Church of Christ. They welcome everybody. And so do we. So we had the same philosophy there. It matched and it was good. So we've been there ever since. And we know that when people come to our liturgical gatherings, they too are taking a risk. They are stepping out of the rules of the church, and that can be very risky and dangerous and scary. So we don't expect people to come every week. Sometimes they can't. They're still involved in a parish, a traditional parish where they have obligations or whatever, but they do come. That we have some faithful members that do come every week, and it's because they've reached an age or a place in their life where they're making the rules according to their conscience, and they believe that what we're doing is what needs to happen, and that takes a lot of courage. So every week, I always thank them for their spirit to worship in a community that is about justice and equality.
So, you would assume then that if someone goes to your liturgy,
yes,
and then talks to a mainstream Catholic priest, that mm-hmm. priest would say that you are not meeting your Sunday obligation by going
that's
to
correct.
St. Bridget's.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's correct.
I'm
in fact, after I was ordained in 2014, the bishop sent a notice, the Roman Catholic traditional bishop sent a notice to all the parishes and Catholic institutions in the diocese stating that if they know of anybody who would attempt to go to our liturgies or even attempt to present at any ordination that would be going on in the area in within the woman priest movement, that they would be excommunicated automatically. So we were under kind of a situation here in Cleveland where we got a very conservative bishop in for over a decade, and he was very concerned about a lot of unorthodox things that might have been going on, and came down very hard on the priests and the pastors and everything. So it was difficult for me to even attend a funeral of one of my good friends that was in the Catholic Church without raising some eyebrows that I was there, okay? So, you know, we have to step out as prophets, and, you know, we don't want to, it's not about protesting in front of the cathedral of the traditional Catholic, seat in the diocese. It's not about protesting that way. It's about living what we're called to live in prophetic witness. So they know we're here. Some of the priests, you know, give a kindly nod to me, and others pretend they can't see me. And because I did work in the diocese and in parishes, and I graduated from the diocesan seminary, it's not like I'm not known. And so some of them get nervous when they see me coming, and others are just, you know, very nice to see it, you know, and how's it going, that kind of stuff. So it's nice. But there's a cost to pay for being this type of a prophet today. There's a cost to pay. And before I even was ordained a deacon, my husband and I sat down and said, you know what's going to happen. Let's deal with it now and decide if this is what I should be doing. Because even though I feel called to do this, I know our family and our lives are going to be different. So let's consider the differences that will happen. Let's consider how the family dynamic may change, and then come to a conclusion. Are we being called to do this, or is this something I have to watch on the sidelines? And, of course, you know how that turned out. So
yeah.
I think it's very important. Not everybody is called for this type of role today in the Catholic Church. We are one foot in and one foot out. You know, we're valid, but we're not licit. So we're not totally in, but yet were not unbelievable to many.
So, the people who attend your liturgies, and if you could answer this quickly, because we are coming close to the end, but you get men and women who come to your liturgies.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Is it conceivable that at some point you will ordain a man?
Absolutely. They have to be. No, if I could ordain a man if they are, qualified. Also, they would have to understand the women priest movement and believe in our mission and vision, and be willing to dedicate their ministerial lives to that. And we have in the association, we have three such men right now. Okay, so we have ordained men in our movement, but again, they have to realize that they are pushing women. And in order to be inclusive, we have to look inclusive, don't we?
Indeed.
Mean, we have to walk the talk. So it would be wrong for us to say we believe in an inclusive church, but yet men aren't allowed. No, I'm sorry, we're not like that. And we would never be that way.
And I appreciate that. Mary Eileen, we're out of time right now, but I want to thank you so much for your time today and last week as well. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Fred. It was my honor to discuss this with you. Yes.
You've been listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Mary Eileen Collingwood has been my guest today. She is a bishop at the Community of St. Bridget and Inclusive Catholic Community in Brecksville, Ohio. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.